Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. Today we're going to be exploring in cemeteries. It's been a long time since I've done a video like this, so I thought it'd be kind of fun to not only visit a topic I've only covered maybe two or three times on the channel in total, but something a little different from our normal routine. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a cemetery story or something else, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email that you can find in the description down below. I am currently looking for state park stories, so if you have a state park story, please be sure to send it in. Now, without further ado, hit that like button, subscribe if you're new to the channel, and relax and get ready for some spooky stories from cemeteries. This story was told to me and my family by a cousin of mine when I was 11 years old. I'm 28 now, and I do recall most of the details, but not all of them, so bear with me. My cousin was so spooked when he told the incident, he didn't really give the full details either, so I'm gonna do my best. In 2001, my cousin Eric, who is 25, was driving from Southern California to a small town in Oregon called Coos Bay to go visit his family. His family used to live in California, but after an unfortunate event, their apartment burning down, they chose to move to Oregon where they had other family. They moved to seek new beginnings. He chose to continue to reside in California since by that time he had already settled down. He was in a serious relationship with his girlfriend and had two small daughters. So on this road trip, it was him, his girlfriend, his two daughters, and two other cousins of ours, whose name and age are really not important. I say this because this event was witnessed by several people. It takes roughly about 18 hours from Southern California to get to Coos Bay, Oregon, without stopping for gas, food, or a bathroom break. By the time he had reached Oregon, it was nighttime, and he was about 2 hours away from his destination. He was driving on a lonely road. They were passing by what seemed to be a cemetery. On the side of the road, his girlfriend spotted two people, just standing there. She told him to pull over as maybe they need help. He did, and as he slowly stopped next to them, before they could even roll down their windows and ask them if they needed help, his girlfriend told him to keep driving in a tone of fear. From what he told me, the reason they didn't ask the people if they needed any help is that the people looked really abnormal and strange. Their skin, body and clothes looked deteriorated and really old, almost like they were dead. Now, I'm of the Christian faith, so I don't believe it was corpses that got out of the grave or the spirits of those dead people who had passed away from the cemetery, but I do believe it was even worse than demonic spirits roaming around for whatever reason. You guys can believe this or you guys can discredit it, whatever. Thanks for sharing my story. I know this story is going to sound completely convoluted and fabricated, but I assure you this is a completely true event. This story takes place a couple of summers ago in good old Virginia. My friend, we will call him Jimmy, wanted to go ghost hunting at a local cemetery. Now, I am not a huge fan of ghosts or anything of that matter, but it sounded like fun, and definitely was going to make the night more interesting than just sitting inside and playing video games all night. the local cemetery had its own legends. The cemetery is absolutely huge. I won't give the location, but any person will know the place. It was about 12 a.m., maybe even 1, and we parked down the street at a local park. We walked through some woods as we didn't really want the local PD catching us. It was a nice night out. It wasn't too hot or too cold. Perfect for walking to the gravestones. I also would like to state, we're not there to disrespect anyone or if any family members. We always walk in there asking the local ghosts if we can be there. We traveled up and down the rows of graves, checking each one, asking things like, are you here? Can you touch one of us? In our phone's voice recorder. I don't scare easily, and I was nervous getting touched by something I cannot see. We were there maybe 2 hours when we sat up against a tree to take a break. We talked amongst ourselves when Jimmy hit my arm and said, what the heck is that? I looked up and about 20 or so feet in front of us was a guy, in a suit that looked torn up. It was dirty, and from what I could make out of his face, it was a pale white and very skeletal looking. He was definitely walking like you would see a zombie on the Night of the Living Dead. I swear at first we thought someone was playing a joke on us, with a very well put together costume. It wasn't making the sound a zombie would make, more like if someone just ran a mile and was out of breath. It looked like it was struggling to walk. At no point did it turn around and look at us though, it just kept walking. We followed it with our eyes, trying to make out any sound. We watched this thing make its way down the row of graves. Then it walked behind a giant pile of what looked like to be a newly dug grave. We waited for about 15 minutes for this thing to appear from the other side, but it never did. We walked down the row of graves and slowly made our way around that pile of dirt. Nothing. There was nothing there. Just an empty grave. If this was a prank, this person would have been hiding in the dirt or invisible or something, because our eyes never left that pile of dirt. We stood there for what felt like hours, trying to come up with a reasonable explanation, but we didn't, and we've left that night completely freaked the heck out. I would never go back there again. I don't care if you believe my story, I know what I saw. I'm from Saluda, South Carolina, a very old and rural country town, steeped in Indian history. My grandparents are descendants of sharecroppers that have been on the land for over a century and a half. We used to go from the city to the country every summer from Atlanta to South Carolina in the country. It was a very set schedule. Wake up, eat, go outside to play, come back at noon to eat, and then go back out to play. No in and out. Dusk comes in, you wash up, eat up, and pray, and go to sleep. My brother and I would run off into the field and play all day. We'd skip rocks at lakes, shoot squirrel and rabbit with BB guns, eat berries, and all sorts of fun. Well, in one particular part of the pasture, there was a circle of trees and bushes that even the cows didn't go in. Our grandmother told us that it was an Indian graveyard, and we were to stay out of it. It was off limits. Every summer, we went up to South Carolina. My brother and I got closer and closer to the strange place. We could see staffs and hanging skulls and feathers and strange tombstones and crows that were there. There were artifacts all around. It seemed like the closer we got, the eerier it became. We would hear sounds of drums being beaten, see apparitions of chief-like looking men, and in the distance, we would hear what sounded like eagles or hawks. Sometimes we would even see them fly overhead, cawing as we got ready to enter the patch. Well, we told our grandmother about it, and she told us to stay out of there, as we would disturb the dead and bad things would happen. Being a kid, I was hard-headed, and one day coming back from the pond fishing, I walked past the cemetery. I ran up to it, slowing down the closer I got, and I could see all the same stuff. The staff, the feathers, the Indian arrowheads, the bones. At this time, I grabbed one of the arrowheads and ran back to the house. I got in. I went into my room to examine it, and my grandma yelled, "Y'all better get ready for lunch." I stashed the arrowhead under my mattress before I could even look at it. I ate my food, and after eating, my grandma was in the kitchen and said, "Son, I told you to stay out of that cemetery." I said I wasn't in it, Grandma. She said, "Yes, you were. I know you were." I got silent and thought, how did she know? "You stay out of that cemetery." I said I wasn't in it, Grandma. And she said, "Yes, you were." So I stopped arguing with her. We were just going in circles. You can't even see the cemetery from the house, nor any vantage point. She hasn't been in any room because she has been in the kitchen since I came in. After I finished eating and was about to head out, she said, "If you got anything from there, you better take it back." I said, "No, ma'am, I don't," and hurried out the door. And as I played, for the remainder of the afternoon, I felt so uneasy. How did she know what was going to happen? Later that evening, I came in, washed up for dinner, sat and ate. It was rather silent this night. I sensed an odd feeling. My brother and I said prayers and we were off to bed. As I drifted off to sleep, I could hear little noises and thought it must be the old mouse that scurries along the wall down the hall at night. As I was dozing off, my eyes got heavy and I saw my grandma coming down the hall. But as she got closer, it wasn't her. This person had the face of a wolf or a demon with stringy clothes on. It walked straight into the room and got on my bed. I tried to scream, but I could not. I tried to call for my brother who was on the top bunk, but my mouth was covered by the thing. It was laughing and sobbing in my mouth over the top of me. I thought I was going to die. I was scared senseless. I passed out as it choked me to sleep. The next morning I woke up to my brother saying it was time to eat and to come on. He hopped down and ran for the bathroom thinking I was going to chase him, for who's first like every other morning, but I was still in shock. When I finally got to the table, my grandma asked how did we both sleep. My brother said that he had an awful dream that something had broke in, not a person, but something that was just something he couldn't remember. As I went to blurt out my dream, my grandma said, "Hush you, like yesterday at lunch, I told you to stay out of the cemetery." She said, "Whatever you took from there, you need to return it. I can't take it back, nor can your brother, or otherwise your dreams will get worse till you wake up in the cemetery." In 2002, my friends and I, who I will call Dave and Don, decided to have a midnight grave walk at one of our local cemeteries. This particular burial ground had been the source of many pubescent screams between my friends and I throughout the years. There had been times we thought we saw someone walking amongst the gravestones, watching us, knowing that any moment we could die of fright. Then there was the shed. How could I forget the shed? This run-down piece of architecture sat in the back of the cemetery, engulfed by the coiled arbor. If it's normal for houses to make settling noises at night, then you might try to convince yourself that the sound emanating from within this dark wooden asylum is just routine. As the wood warps from age, something that sounds like a moan, a cry of pain, hits the sky. Was it the wind? Or are there people trapped beneath the floorboards trying to break through? Those were the questions I could not answer and did not want to. On this cold autumn night, I ventured off with Dave and Don to lurk about the cemetery, mainly to soak in the gothic atmosphere, and maybe even see a ghost. We had been videotaping ourselves earlier in the evening to chronicle our treks together, so naturally, I brought my camera with me. Once we parked our car in the middle of the graveyard, parking it on the side might attract cops to tell us to leave, we got out and started walking. We hiked around the cemetery not realizing beforehand that we had been walking straight through darkness. Though the light was scarce, I used the small light of my camera to lead the way. Every now and then, we could hear something off in the distance, which would lead us to jump out of our shoes. Being the situation we were in, we figured it was just our minds playing tricks on us and laughed it off. Shortly thereafter, we approached a mausoleum that was built into a grassy knoll. We were no longer surrounded by trees, which let the moon shine down on its roof, illuminating in all of its gloom. The doors were enormous. Standing in the middle of them looked like we were going to be devoured. All three of our heads turned towards the roof. "Hey, let's check out the top," said Dave. "I think we'll be able to see inside." As you may know, mausoleums hold coffins. Coffins hold corpses. And being the morbidly fascinated individuals we are, we wanted to see if we could see any dead bodies. The night was calm, an eerie calm if you ask me. Weightless leaves stuck to the ground like adhesive and the trees remained stationary. Don was probably the only one opposed to the climb. "I don't know that we should," she'd say. But Dave and I just ignored her. We all walked up the hill of the mausoleum, holding each other's jackets from behind due to the fact we couldn't see anything. I led the way using the light of my camera to alert me of any pointy rocks and hanging tree branches. As we neared the top, the wind began to blow. Not much, just a little. The top of the mausoleum had a round window that gave us an aerial view of the floor inside the shelves below. The shelves held the coffins. The coffins held the corpses. All three of us looked through the window, patiently waiting for our eyes to adjust to the light, or the lack thereof it, to see what we could see. "I think I see them," I exclaimed. "There's like three of them," Dave included. "I don't want to look down," remarked Don. We hadn't looked at the coffins long, once the wind began to pick up. Don looked around at the trees and looked at the sky. "I don't want to be here anymore," she whimpered. "What's the big deal?" one of us said. I don't remember which. All of a sudden, a big gust of wind struck our backs. The leaves that had once been attached to the ground flung themselves in the air and brushed our faces. The force was so strong that it was actually too much strain to keep ourselves firmly in place. We screamed, but we couldn't hear each other. "We need to go," yelled Don. All three of us grabbed one another and made our way down the hill. "I can't see a thing," screamed Dave. Don yelled some more. At that point, we wanted to get the heck out of there, but the way down was a lot harder than going up. Since we were scared out of our wits, we were not taking the time to make sure our feet landed. Sometimes they slipped on the grass. Sometimes we smacked the rocks with our toes. We were lucky no one tumbled down the hill. When I got home that night, I watched the tape. There we were, at the bottom of the hill. No sounds, maybe a couple of crickets. And then, there we were on the rooftop of the mausoleum. Nothing but wind. You know that sound when the wind hits the microphone? That's all you heard. Nothing else except our screams. A decade ago, my ex-wife and I rented an apartment from an elderly lady. We lived upstairs and she lived downstairs. It was huge. An enormous living room, two decent-sized bedrooms, and access to the attic for storage. Her son gave us a great discount on the rent because we kept his mom company. We also did odd jobs for her, such as mowing and taking out her garbage. It was an awesome arrangement for a young married couple just getting on their feet. Now, a bit of information on the house itself. It had been built in the late 1800s on the edge of an old cemetery. The cemetery was torn up in the early 1900s to make room for the growing city around it. All of the graves had been relocated to a new cemetery on the outskirts of the city, but rumor had it that a few of the graves were left behind. The whole situation was straight out of the plot of Poltergeist. Digging up cemeteries never seems to go well with, you know, the spirits, I guess. We lived in the apartment for several months before any activity started. It began with subtle creaking in the hallway outside of our bedroom. It sounded like footsteps that would pace back and forth down the long hallway. The floor in the hallway was hard wood, so the creaking was quite audible at times. I would rush out of the bedroom, expecting to find an intruder or burglar, but no one was ever there. This happened every night without fail. Eventually, we would just lay there in bed, frozen with fright. There was not much else we could do, honestly. After several months, the activity took on a new behavior. The footsteps would now stop in front of the bedroom door for a few moments before going back to the pacing. Sometimes, the doorknob would rattle a bit, as if someone was trying to turn it. This occurred nightly for several months, but luckily the door never did open. One time, when I got up in the middle of the night to use the restroom, I saw a pair of translucent legs. There was nothing above the waist, walk past our bed and straight into the wall. It startled me, but I tried my best to brush it off. One time, we left a digital recorder running while we slept and caught a creepy male voice stating that it was in the bedroom with us. My ex-wife and I managed to live there for 2 years. When we finally moved out and we were carrying out the last of our stuff, the old lady downstairs asked us if we were moving because of the ghost. When we were silent, not knowing how to respond, she told us that she was fully aware that the house was haunted. She told us that her family had been upstairs in the past to bless and exorcise the apartment. They had gone through all of the rooms with holy water while reading various Bible verses. Obviously, it just didn't work. This helped validate that our experiences were not the products of overactive imaginations. Other people had experienced these spirits as well. I still wonder to this day if this ghostly activity was related to the old cemetery that had once bordered the house. I wonder if the disturbed graves have caused unrest in the spirits. Unrest that lasted for a century. I sincerely hope that these spirits will find peace one day. I have a bunch of stories from my childhood as well as my parents' lives preceding my birth. You guys can believe what you will, but everything I share here has actually happened to either me or my family members. I'm a female in my late 20s. My parents are a charming lesbian couple who own a funeral home and a cemetery in a village on the outskirts of the Alaskan tundra. It was a small business that had been passed down from my mother Agatha's father, who inherited it from his father and so on. Katie, my other mother, was terrified of the whole situation from the beginning. She was positive that someone would get possessed with us living so close to a field of corpses, which were her words exactly. Over time, exactly 8 years after they moved there, she grew to respect the land as well as the tenants resting in peace there. I was born shortly after her change of heart, but she still limited my access to the cemetery. And while no one was ever possessed, we still had our fair share of terrifying experiences at our home and throughout the property. I went to a tiny schoolhouse every weekday from the time I could walk. Only 30 or so children lived in our town, so we were all educated in one room by a small group of teachers. Katie and her twin sister Gloria were two of these teachers. The three of us would walk to and from the town every day, while Agatha and her brother Cal took care of the property. It was a 20-minute trek, but on the occasional day without freezes, we got to take our bikes, and that was generally the highlight of my life. However, on this particular day in December, we had to walk. We were only at the school until about 4 o'clock that afternoon, but the sun usually set around 3:30, so we were shrouded mostly in darkness by the time we got to the dirt road leading up to our property. I was about 6 or 7 at the time, and I still used my clumsiness as an excuse not to walk up the path, muddied by snow. Glory had drawn the short straw and was giving me a piggyback, all the way up the hill. I was resting my head against her back and staring at the cemetery that was beginning to come into view around the paper birches and spruce trees. It was a sprawling field filled with an odd assortment of mausoleums and colorful tombs of Inuit and the Russian Orthodox citizens. I was always entranced by the graves and tried to pick out ones that I had yet to see. We were nearly to the house when I saw a figure standing in the far right corner of the cemetery. It was hard to discern their age or gender, but I could tell from the build that it wasn't Agatha or Cal. Visiting hours ended at sundown regardless of the date, so I immediately pointed to the person and asked Katie who that was. Now, most of the finer details are recalled by my parents and older family members, due to my young age throughout most of these events, but I can still clearly remember hearing Katie mutter, crap, quietly under her breath. She helped me off Glory's back and ordered that I go inside to tell Cal to meet them in the field. Without hesitation, I suddenly found myself as sure-footed as a bunny on the icy ground and sprinted the last 20 or so yards up to the house. I swung the door open and went into the kitchen, where I knew I'd find Aga and Cal, and told my uncle to get the trespasser. Groaning, Cal finished his cup of coffee, which was probably spiked with whiskey, and stood up from the table. Cal was a big guy, maybe about 6'8", with broad shoulders and what I call Fred Flintstone fists. Basically, he could knock someone out with not much effort, and he did so time to time. He was insanely protective of his sisters, and all of the other women in his life, Glory and Katie included. The entire town respected him and feared him at the same time. He was a nice at-home security system. Naturally, I was thrilled with this tiny bit of excitement in my normally humdrum life. When my uncle charged out the back without so much as a coat on, I turned my pleading eyes to Aga, who barely flinched at the activity. She stared back at me for only a moment before sighing and motioning to the rack by the door. I grabbed her parka and helped her put it on as we made our way outside, knowing that her wife was going to be none too thrilled with my presence in the cemetery. Aga picked me up, and we reached the cast iron fence that surrounded the property. We could see Cal's giant silhouette approaching the tiny ones of Katie and Glory. The stranger was still a good 100 or so yards from all of us. "Let's hide and watch," I whispered to Aga when I realized that Katie hadn't spotted us yet. For a moment, I thought my mother would shake her head and go to the others, but she surprised me by giving me a conspiring smile and ducking behind a mausoleum. "We can get to Grandmother's grave if we are very quiet," she told me with a glint in her eye. She loved the graveyard and had spent her childhood playing in it, while also learning about her ancestors and the other people of her town. She wanted me to enjoy it as much as she did. We hurried from grave to grave, pausing only long enough to make sure that the others didn't see us. Katie, Glory, and Cal were moving swiftly as well, but they were too busy eyeing the figure standing only about 20 feet from the large tomb that encased my great-grandmother, our destination. When we arrived at the tomb, Aga set me down and we crouched behind the rocks and the wood that surrounded my grandmother's altar. It was then that I began to feel nerves eat away at my gut. This was a stranger, I could tell. They were standing at a base of a mausoleum built to honor the infants who had passed before being blessed by the tribe's shaman. This was an old, outdated site that didn't fully honor Inuit customs, though, and it had been redone in 1970, closer to the northern section of the property. No one came to this site because it would be considered disrespectful to their deceased, but it would have been just as disrespectful to tear it down. So it was just a derelict memorial that loomed on the tiny hilltop of that section of the cemetery. Tension filled the air as Cal, flanked by Katie and Glory, approached the stranger. I could hear my uncle speaking to them, likely telling them the hours were over and asking him if they'd like a ride back into town. He always started off nice, giving people the benefit of the doubt before going into Hulk mode. Aga had initially been giggling at the sight of her brother looming over the trespasser. She was beginning to cling tighter onto me as time went on. It took us a few minutes to realize the person hadn't been responding to Cal, nor had they even looked his way. They just continued to stare at the area just above the mausoleum. Katie and Glory were exchanging uneasy glances, and at one point Cal told them to go back to the house. They refused to step closer to his side. When words failed, Cal resorted to physical approach. He later recalled that he couldn't tell the person, an old man, was frail, and he didn't want to hurt him. But he wasn't listening, and if he was deaf, he would have to get his attention somehow. My uncle placed a gentle hand on the gentleman's shoulder, and immediately he felt a wave of nausea overcome him. He hunched over, clutching his abdomen, and cried out. Aga ordered me to stay put before darting out from behind the stones and over to her brother, who waved her and the other woman off. He insisted that they go inside, but they were all frozen in place. The strange man still hadn't moved, so Katie yelled at him once more. She stepped around in front of him and waved a hand in his face. "You need to leave." I had heard her command. "You cannot be here after dark. It's not safe." "No, it's not," the stranger finally said. He lowered his eyes to smile at my mother. "Are you all right, dear?" He spoke so casually to her that she stood there in shock for a good moment. She looked back to Cal, who was on his knees at this point. While she was distracted, the man turned towards the exit. When he was coming towards my hiding spot, I had every intention of getting up and running away, but I was frozen in place. It felt like my body was being held down by weights, and I was sinking into the earth. I whimpered and buried my face in my arms, praying to God and my great-grandmother for safety. The ice and leaves crunched in my ears, and I knew Aga realized my predicament and said something to the others because I could hear Katie shouting at her. Finally summoning the courage, I looked up to see the man walking right by me. He didn't so much as look my way, but as he passed, he said, "Good night, Blue Eyes," in a dulcet whisper. Immediately, I relaxed and climbed to my feet. I watched him practically float out of the cemetery and towards the road. Katie came and got me, telling me that we had to take my uncle to the hospital. As it turns out, Cal had to go in for an emergency surgery because his appendix had ruptured. He's convinced the old man somehow cursed him. Even Aga, sweet but superstitious Aga, had her doubts about his claims. There was nothing malicious in Cal's approach to the man, so why would he have cursed him? Nothing makes sense anymore. Everything is confusing, but I never did see that man on my property again. I was a little sad about it, but the adults were all glad. Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true cemetery stories. What would you do if you went to a cemetery and you saw something that looked like a zombie? I think I might just poop myself, honestly. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us and hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a cemetery story or something else, be sure to submit that at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp, and stories like yours that help keep this channel going. If you guys aren't aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller Scary Stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about every other major podcasting platform out there. Thank you guys, as always, if you made it all the way to the end. I really appreciate that. If you guys did make it to the end, today's code word is 3032. Comment that down below to let me know that you made it all the way to the end, and to confuse anybody else who didn't. I love seeing your crazy and wild little combinations you guys make in your comments. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.